Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. Streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Matt, what's going on? Finally going into All-Star break. How are you? Finally get a little bit of a break here. How you doing?
I'm good, Jordan. What's going on, Bulls Nation? Happy to be taking a break from the Bulls as we head into the end of this week and All-Star weekend. Looking forward to it, and looking forward to fielding a lot of fans' thoughts, questions, and comments on today's mailbag episode.
Yeah, I think this is going to be just a mix of some remnants from the trade deadline, what we heard from before, the reaction from Otto Porter's trade, the reaction from the press conference, the radio interviews, and everything that we've gotten since then. So we're going to mix, intertwine voicemails, text messages like we do every single week here on Bulls Mailbag, Locked On Bulls Mailbag. You can drop text messages, voicemails at 331-979-1369 as well on Twitter. Let's dive right into these questions. So from the 919, kind of piggybacks off of our last episode, which Bulls free agent should they keep? I think the only one that is worthwhile right now is Wayne Selden Jr. Matt, your thoughts? This one from the 919.
Yeah, I certainly would agree that it is worthwhile for the Bulls to at least try to negotiate a new contract with Selden this summer, knowing that they will no longer be players for big names in free agency, but they still need to fill in the holes of this roster for next season outside of their key guys. Selden is certainly showing us something right now. It looks like, you know, back when we saw that Holiday trade go down, you and I were saying, wow, we can't, you know, we actually got 2 second-round picks for Holiday. That's cool. And that sort of was the main focal point of the trade. And it just seemed like Selden was just, you know, the guy along with Brooks that they sent over. But in actuality, Selden has become a very important part of this Bulls rotation. And when you talk about some of the other decisions the Bulls have as far as who's on the roster this season going into next season, I don't think Robin Lopez is here to stay, even if he doesn't get bought out and finishes this season in a Bulls uniform. Obviously, Cam has been waived. Denzel is under contract for $3.37 million next season, which, you know, I'm over Denzel. I'm ready to be done with it, but he's probably coming back. Luwawu, who, of course, you know, came over in the trade with OKC, I haven't been that impressed with what I've seen from him. I don't think it should be a pressing matter for the Bulls to keep him around. And then when you get to some of the other guys like, Blakeney under contract at $1.5 million, the guy's been bouncing between the Windy City Bulls and the real squad for the last week or so. I think Boylan certainly is fed up with him and his shoot first mentality. Archie has a qualifying offer of $1.8 million next season, and Shaq Harrison has $1.5 million non-guaranteed. Those guys, Archie and Shaq, have filled in dutifully at times when this team has been very depleted because of injuries. I don't think it should be a priority for the Bulls to keep either of those guys. I think they can do better elsewhere in free agency on guys who might not necessarily be second or even third-tier guys, but veteran role players who they might pay a little bit more than Archie and Shaq, but who can play at a higher level than those guys.
Yep, I would agree with you too. Wayne Selden has a qualifying offer for $1.931 million next season, or this offseason, I should say. So we'll watch for that. He's a restricted free agent this summer. Like you were saying at the tail end of our episode too, is like, you got to be careful, depending on how many teams have been actually watching Wayne Seldon and seeing what his offers are. And look, like we were talking too, is this offseason, as far as free agency goes, is going to be very lucrative and how many players are out there. So I don't know what the market is going to be for Wayne Seldon. So I think the Bulls are in a pretty good situation of wanting to bring him back and what the cost is going to be for him. So I think they're in the driver's seat for Wayne Seldon. If he continues to play the way he does for 27 games. And then also, too, I want to bring this up since we're talking about him. We had somebody on Twitter ask us about our conversation a few days ago about bringing up Denzel Valentine and Wayne Seldon, and said, you know, I agree with 99% of the things that you guys say on the show, but I don't really get how you guys think that Wayne Seldon is better than Denzel Valentine. Sure, defensively, Seldon is much better, but I believe their offensive ability is not even close. And I just kind of responded to that and just said, you know, we didn't get really deep into this comparison of either of the two players, but the Bulls can have both guys. Like, Valentine's on board for next year. The option's already picked up, and Seldon's restricted free agent. They can have both guys, bring them both in for next year, evaluate who fits, let them fight it out, and they should do that. Both Valentine and Seldon can switch between the two and the three. Bring both guys in, evaluate who fits, trade or let go of the one that doesn't. And that's simply how it should go in a rebuild. So what are your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't agree with that fan's assessment that, sure, Seldon's better on the defensive end, but offensively it's no contest. Like, we were just talking in our previous show about how Seldon's shooting the lights out for behind the three-point line recently.
Right.
And I think he has, as far as who's on this roster right now, one of the highest basketball IQs in a Bulls jersey right now. You see him make the right pass. You see him make the right play. Since he arrived via that holiday trade, the dude looks like one of the more intelligent players on the floor every night for the Bulls. So, I mean, I know that Valentine statistically was this team's best three-point shooter last season, and maybe this fan who is texting us is a good pal of C-Red Fred's, who's obsessed with Denzel being a piece of this team long-term. But I would vehemently disagree with the fact that Valentine is unquestionably a better offensive player than Wayne Seldon. Because right now, Seldon looks like a very useful player on both ends of the floor. Oh, and by the way, he's not wearing a gigantic boot sitting on the sideline in street clothes.
Yeah, that's what I go back to, is the injury. I need to see Denzel Valentine after a year not playing and all the injuries that have stacked up. So my point is, like, beyond his opinion or the analysis of who Denzel Valentine is compared to Wayne Seldon, just bring both guys in and evaluate what happens next year between the two and let them fight it out. That's where I'm at. Both similar in age, both similar in cost. It'll be 1 year. Let those two fight it out. Agreed with you, though. It's going to be at low cost control. Denzel shot, too, 38.6% last year in 77 games. So, yeah, I mean, you've got options. And there's no reason to let Wayne Seldon walk just because you got Denzel on the roster for next year. There's no reason for that. And we'll see. 18 games isn't a big sample size either. So we got to see if he can stick that out and continue to play as well as he is in this short term. So some things to think about, but the Bulls are in the driver's seat for him. So yes, bring him back. That should be a priority. Don't let him walk like David Nwaba did for nothing last year. And arguably, Wayne Seldon's probably a better piece than Nwaba was last year. So
certainly more useful on the offensive end. All right, this next one comes to us from the 808. Hey, gents, can someone explain a dumbed-down version of the rules regarding waiving or releasing a player to free up cap space? This kind of goes into what we were just talking about, Jordan. I'm stumped why the Bulls haven't released and waived Felicio and Valentine yet, seeing how they could potentially open another $10 million in cap space. If releasing and waiving Felicio and Valentine is impossible, how do you guys feel about packaging our 2019 first-round pick, if it falls out of the top five, Valentine and Felicio, for another huge contract on a player that a team doesn't want but benefits the Bulls? For example, if the Blazers want to rebuild and are willing to trade Damian Lillard, can the Bulls offer this trade to help Portland free up their cap space by trading Lillard and his salary, waiving Felicio and Valentine? The Bulls, in turn, get a point guard we need. Hope to hear from you. Thanks for the great pod. Okay, so a lot of elements there, Jordan. Before we get to the how, you know, waiving releasing works, I would say that this proposed trade with the Blazers if they are actually getting into this offseason thinking about finally blowing it up and blowing up their backcourt of Dame and McCollum, would not at not even they would laugh at that offer of the lottery pick that isn't number one just so that they can shed Lillard's contract. Lillard is a superstar, and they would absolutely demand more than that. So I don't think that this fan's proposed hypothetical there is in the world of reality at all. As far as the waiving and releasing goes, they have a stretch provision in the current CBA, which the Bulls have used on Omer Asik, who, remember, had to come in so that they could get a first-rounder for Nico last year. But the amnesty clause that they used to get rid of Boozer's tail end of his contract, there is no such amnesty clause in the current form of the CBA. So there are talks of an amnesty coming back in the next CBA when that is negotiated, but right now, that is not a thing they can do.
Just getting rid of Felicio on your roster doesn't mean you don't owe him money. You still got to pay him that money. You still owe him that $16 million. Look, I'm in agreement with you. The Blazers would laugh at that offer, even with the first-round pick included. Like what we were talking about, I think about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks ago on a mailbag we did. This was about a week ago when we were doing our trade deadline. Like talking about CJ McCollum, like you have to include somebody like Zach LaVine or maybe Wendell Carter Jr. for the Blazers not even to hang up the phone on you. Like that's what the cost is to get a superstar or a star in this league. You've got to start with a building piece for anybody to give up a star. That's just frankly what it is. And including a first round pick that's not in a top heavy draft, that's not a starter. Would you want that on the Bulls if somebody came to you and said, hey, we'll give you Denzel Valentine, Cristiano Felicio, and a first-round pick for, say it was Jimmy Butler 2 years ago? Would that be cool with you?
I mean, the only way I would consider that is if I knew that it was the number one pick and I would get Zion. No, like,
right.
In the specific context of this 2019 draft, it is like if I'm the Blazers in that hypothetical, I only maybe consider it if I know I'm getting the number one pick, a.k.a. Zion, if I'm getting ready to blow this up and get rid of Damian Lillard, one of the best scoring point guards in the league right now. That is the only way I consider it. So this person's suggestion of like, but only if it's outside the top five, like why would the Blazers do that? If I'm the Bulls and your hypothetical, Jordan, if that were the package or the offer for Jimmy, hey, we'll help you clear some cap space and give you a lottery pick, and you give us Jimmy, I'm laughing at that.
As far as the stretch goes, I think it was Ryan Bohr out there, the Bulls GM on Twitter. I think somebody had asked him a few days ago, right at the trade deadline, is if the Bulls even considered waiving and stretching Felicio's contract, what would that look like? And I think over 5 years, it would be something like somewhere around $3 million over 5 years on the books. But why would you do that if you're still in a rebuild? Just get off the money, get off the books in 2 years. You already just committed to $27 million over 2 years to Otto Porter. So if things aren't going right anyway, you still got all that money there, so just leave it. Because then you can completely wipe your sheet in 2 years. So just leave it at this point, right?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so thanks for the question. I understand like the cap thing is difficult, and over the next few weeks, we'll try to bring a cap expert on to just kind of run through the next few years, what the Bulls cap situation looks like, and kind of talk through all of this stuff.
All right, Jordan, this next one comes to us from Nick at the University of Minnesota. Gophers! That's their mascot, right? All right, Nick's question is about a new big for the Bulls. After this season, the Bulls will have one true center on the team. I'm not counting Felicio, speak of the devil. And I saw some people suggesting they bring back Joakim Noah as a veteran big man to play behind Wendell. What are your thoughts on that? And if not him, who would you want to bring in? Thanks. This is an interesting one, Jordan, especially on the heels of we saw Joakim and the Grizzlies play the Bulls Wednesday night. He has really had some strong performances. He had that 19-14 performance off the bench for them earlier this week. He certainly looks revitalized in this resurgent part of his career after some really tough years in New York. I don't know. I'm sure you are as much as I. Very happy for Joe that he is back playing in the NBA and playing a real role for a team, even if it's a bad, downtrending team like Memphis.
I don't know about this place, man. I just stayed in my hotel room, man. Every time I look out my window, it's pretty depressing out here, man. It's bad. It's bad.
So you're not going out?
No. No going out in Cleveland, man. It's all factories.
Do you regret anything that you said about Cleveland?
Not at all. You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation. I mean, what's so good about Cleveland?
I love the idea of bringing Joe back as a veteran, like, leader and role player and front court depth guy on this team at some point. But I don't know if you've read it yet. Sam Smith did a great piece for Bulls.com talking to Joe just a couple weeks ago about where he is now. And he ended the interview asking Joakim about if he's thought about coming back to finish his career in a Bulls uniform. And Joakim essentially brushed it off and said, you know, I'm not there yet. I'm trying to live in the now, be the best version of myself, finish out this season strong, and you know, take it one day at a time. So I don't know where Joe's head is on that idea. I know, as I said, I would love it. I don't know if there are certain bridges that need to be rebuilt and mended, because he did not leave on great terms and he left this organization very frustrated.
I agree with you on that. I think, you know, we can't forget about all the relationships that were kind of not necessarily burned, but, you know, not left in on the greatest of terms. And it doesn't have to necessarily be with the front office. It can just be how things ended here, you know? And do you want to really bring that all back up? And Joe, for the first time, has actually got back out on the court and having some success. And I don't think he's ready to just turn immediately around and come back to the place that it all kind of ended. So maybe he wants to go somewhere where he can be competitive and maybe chase that ring that he never got a chance to get to the finals. And that those can be still on his list of priorities, so... You know, none of us know what his goals are still. So I don't know if being a veteran mentor is something on his list yet. And that to me doesn't sound like that's something he's looking at.
Because when you hear him talk, you hear him talk about how the Bulls got so close, you know, to the ultimate NBA mountaintop with, you know, some of those teams in the early 2010s with MVP Derek and the way he was playing well and Lou Waldang in his prime and Taj is a great role guy and a glue guy. It still stings Noah that team didn't win a title, because he really thought they had what it takes and they came close. Of course, Derek's injury derailed all of that. But what I will say for those who are hoping to see Joakim back in a Bulls uniform at some point before he retires, and I agree with you, I think it's probably not likely to happen soon if he does keep playing and has four or five more seasons in him. Two of the key pieces that really made Joakim's exit and final season with the Bulls so frustrating are no longer here. Those pieces being Fred Hoiberg and Jimmy Butler. Because Fred Hoiberg is the one who really, you know, got Joakim a little ticked off with the whole, Fred told the media that it was Joakim's idea to come off the bench so that Pau and Nico could start together, and Joakim flat out denied that and said, that's not true. I never volunteered to come off the bench. So there was miscommunication there with Fred that clearly, I think, hurt Joe's feelings. And simultaneously, Jimmy Butler was turning into this rising megastar who tried to take over that locker room, which was, up until that point, Joakim and Derek's locker room. And there all of a sudden was this huge divide. And as much as the media wanted to make it out to be Derek versus Jimmy, it was way more so Joakim versus Jimmy. And Joakim had a huge problem with Jimmy's suddenly immense ego. So Jimmy's gone and Fred's gone. That might help if the Bulls are interested in bringing Joakim back to rebuild some of those bridges that have been burnt, because those two key guys are no longer here and they were a big part of the problem as far as what soured Joakim on the Bulls at the end of his tenure.
Very interesting. I'm just looking over the centers as far as who is a free agent this summer, and not saying that they need to bring in another center, because they probably don't, but if they do, and I don't want Cristiano Felicio Wendell Carter Jr.
Assuming Rolo walks and we can't use Felicio. Like, Felicio, even though we're tanking, can't even get into the rotation as of Monday night. Like, Boylan has been going 10 deep, and Monday night he went 9 deep and didn't play Felicio.
So if they don't draft somebody, which they've got plenty of other needs that need to be filled besides drafting somebody. So if they don't take somebody with, say, the Memphis pick in the second round, if they don't address the need in the draft, or the young player, here's who I tell you I don't want. DeAndre Jordan's one of them. Don't go anywhere near him.
Oh, God.
Dwight Howard's another one.
No, because...
Don't go anywhere near him.
They probably couldn't even afford DeAndre Jordan.
I don't know. That would be... That's a debate for this summer.
He's an overpaid player, but he's a name. Like, DeAndre Jordan is going to get money somewhere. Name,
but that's a debate for the summer. But I'll say just stay away from him. Stay away from Dwight Howard. What, if any, leadership qualities are in Tyson Chandler, but that's another name that's an old veteran out there. He'll be cheap, too. So I don't know what connection there is there. But other than that, I don't see any names that are just popping off the screen to me as far as free agents for centers next year. So Joe's the only one out there, but it doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of interest. But things can change, but we'll see. We'll see what he says and how the year plays out for him. So, got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're taking more of your questions, your voicemails. 331-979-1369, the place to hit us up. Drop your text, drop your voicemails. Whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, 331-979-1369. Stay listening to us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
What's up, Bulls Nation? Matt and Jordan here with Locked On Bulls, and a simple request for you, our listeners. We'd like your help. We've put together a survey so we can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite Locked On podcasts, including Locked On Bulls, even better. This is your opportunity to tell us what you like and tell us what you don't like. It should take just 10 to 15 minutes to complete the survey, and by participating in the survey, you enter the chance to win a $250 Vivid Seats gift card. Just visit LockedOnPodcasts.com/survey to participate. That's LockedOnPodcasts.com/survey. We appreciate your feedback very much.
Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Our text and voicemail line is at 331-979-1369. Drop us your text and your voicemails. All right, let's get to some voicemails here.
Hey, fellas. Ryan here down in Texas. Just listened to the spot on the YouTube Deadline show with the other Locked On guys. Awesome to see that. Something that jogged my brain a little bit here. A lot of Bulls fans are concerned with the money spent on Otto Porter, and I know you guys touched on that. But something else to bring up here is that this trade might push us out of that top three when it comes to draft day. And a lot of concern there seems like, which I don't really see. We've seen the success Bulls have had at the seven over the last couple of years. But my question here is, if we do get pushed out of that top three spot into maybe the four or five, what kind of player are the Bulls going to be looking to get? It may be a little premature to talk about specific players, but when it comes to position need, I'm curious who the Bulls are going to go after. Would be curious to hear you guys' thoughts there. Love the show. Talk to you guys soon.
All right, thanks for the call, Ryan from Texas. By the way, too, just real quick before we touch on this call, everybody that drops us text or voicemails, I know we can't get to every single one. We get a ton of voicemails, tons of text messages every single week. But believe me, we do read them. We do listen to them all. And so we try to touch on as many topics as possible. And we incorporate that into our conversation. So don't feel bad if you get left out. We try to get to as many as possible. So continue to do that. We'll get to it at some point. But Ryan, quickly, this is a good conversation to have, and we touched on it a couple different times. But again, Otto Porter being put into the starting lineup, some fans are fearing that this is going to make the Bulls better and make them win games down the stretch. Matt, if the Bulls get pushed out of the top three and maybe are out on Zion, Ja Morant, or RJ Barrett, or Cam Reddish, who are the Bulls? Who should the Bulls be targeting? Who will they be looking at to draft if they end up four or five coming up in this draft? Who do you think that they'll be looking at?
Well, for this scenario, hypothetically, let's just say the Bulls end up at four. I think there's still a chance that Cam Reddish is there at four. Not likely, but there's a chance. And if he is, I know a lot of people have been disappointed overall on the season that Cam Reddish has had for Duke, and that's fair. But he's really started to come along lately, including the insane comeback that Duke had last night. He played very well and hit some big shots, including some big threes down the stretch of that game. So there is some hope about how Cam's game can translate to the NBA. And, you know, some fans may just be panicking about adding another young player named Cameron to this team. And, you know, PTSD, I get it. But I'm just saying the guy has looked better recently. Another name that I think would be interesting if the Bulls are unlucky here and outside the top three and someone to keep an eye on is Jarrett Culver, the shooting guard from Texas Tech. I think I've really liked what I've seen from him this season. Someone I'm down on compared to what I was expecting coming into this season is the wing Nasir Little from UNC. He's kind of trending downward right now for me. And then another guy from Virginia Tech that I think is interesting is Nickeil Alexander-Walker. He's kind of like a combo shooting guard wing, decent size. He's had some pretty strong games this season, and he's right now projected to be like mid lottery, maybe somewhere rounding out the top 10. So as far as position of need, clearly for the Bulls, it's point guard. They have addressed the wing position with Otto, and they do have Chandler Hutchison in the fold now. So I don't know. I don't think they're going to be drafting for need. But if they, you know, if they miss out on Zion and Morant and Barrett, they'll have some options. Most of them are going to be shooting guards and combo wings.
Yeah, I'd be in agreement on that, too. And, like, if John Morant goes in the top three and the Bulls are at four, then Cam Reddish would be your next available player at four. I would agree with that. Like, Cam Reddish can shoot the three, and I know his stats probably don't align great with what people would want. 35% from three on an average of 8 threes a night for Duke. I know that's not great, but kid is only 19. Just looking at his per 36-minute stats, 18.1 points per game, 4.3 rebounds, 2.8 assists, and 2.6 steals a game as the third option on Duke alongside Zion and RJ. I mean, I'll take that. That's fine. And hey, if John Morant slips out of the top three and you're at four and John Morant's that guy, I'm more than pleased with that. I'm totally fine with that.
I would be, based on what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, I would be shocked.
I would totally agree
if the Bulls are at four and Ja Morant is there. I think there's no way he goes outside of the top three.
Crazier things have happened, though. And like I said, you know, after the season's over, you know, weird things happen. Guys slip up and down the board all the time. And, you know, recency bias happens a lot.
For trend into the tourney, and Cam Reddish balls out in the tourney, there's a chance that it can still be Duke 1-2-3, Zion, Barrett, and Reddish. Like, that can still happen.
Agreed. Totally agree. So, some other names. You did bring up Jarrett Culver. I think that is a good option, too. Like, his per 36-minute stats, too, 20.2 points per game, 7.3 rebounds, 4.2 assists, and then 1.2 steals. So 6'5", 190. So yeah, thanks for the question. All right, on to another voicemail here.
Are we doing Jimmy next?
Hi, Matt and Jordan. This is Jimmy from over in the UK. We interact quite a bit on Twitter. As you know, big fan of the show, even from your debatable show before Locked On. I think I've missed, you know, 8 to 10 episodes in total over the years. So I love the show, really do. Big fan. How you guys do that 5 days a week talking about this Bulls team, which, you know, let's be honest, there's not much to be excited about at the moment, is incredible. So keep that going, guys. Brilliant work. To some of the other Bulls fans out there, and it's quite infuriating listening to them, to be honest. Matt, I pretty much agree with most of the things you've said recently. People saying about Bobby going and bringing in Porter Jr., everyone loves Bobby. Yeah, there's no denying that. Everyone, any Bulls fan in the world, I'm over the other side of the pond, we all love Bobby. But this is a great business move. So let's give the front office some credit, yeah? Credit where credit's due. Yeah, they've made some huge mistakes. We all know that. They've been well documented. But this is a good move going forward. People keep saying about the contract. It's not a long contract. I think it's only 2 years after this year. So that's not bad. He's a young player. It's a position we desperately needed to fill, like Matt was saying. I don't understand. I get people are upset that Bobby's gone, but I don't get why they're not happy with the trade. It's a good trade. Gar Foreman and John Paxson have done well for once, so let's give them a bit of credit. Yes, we may win the odd game more. That is a worry. I know Matt said that you don't think it being a problem going forward. I think it may push us to win an extra game or two. Hopefully no more than that. As for Jim Boylan, let's just hope that he's gone in the summer. And someone comes in and does a job with these guys. And obviously, let's hope we get Zion, but that remains to be seen. But yeah, that's about it, really, guys. Keep up the great work. Like I say, I will get out to Chicago one day. I've never actually been. I've been a Bulls fan since the 90s, for obvious reasons. So one day I'm coming out, and I'm gonna meet up with you guys. We can have a beer together, and I'm gonna go to a game. Look forward to it. Keep up the good work, guys. Bye bye.
Hey, thanks for the call, Jimmy. This is the first time we've gotten Jimmy to give us a call. I know it's difficult for our international listeners to give us a call, and Jimmy's figured it out, so we'll try to get in touch with Jimmy and see how he was able to do that. But we definitely want to hear from our international listeners as well. So thanks for dropping the call. Look, I know a lot of our fans, too, some more attached than others to Bobby Portis, and we get it. I felt bad, too, like... Bobby was one the heart and soul of this team, and I liked Bobby too, but the reality of the situation is the Bulls made a move for a guy that's now seemingly, I know it's only three games, but seems to be more of a fit in that starting lineup, and we'll see how that progresses over the next 2 years. But as far as the Jim Boylen thing, Matt, goes, and I'll let you touch on this first, but I have a theory about Jim Boylen and John Paxson. These two guys, Matt, listening to the press conference, the interviews, listening to the way Jim Boylen talks, I'm scared, man. These two philosophies line up more and more together. They are parallel. These two talk the same way, speak the same philosophies, more than I've ever heard a coach line up with the way Paxson thinks. And that scares me to death. And that doesn't change my opinion about me thinking Jim Boylen should be gone at the end of the year. But that scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to highlight some of the similarities in how they talk and what matters to them and talking about, even in Paxson's interviews, saying when he was asked, you know, what he's seen from Boylen recently that gives him faith that Boylen's the right guy to keep doing this, and talking about seeing how guys are fighting hard in practice and stuff like that. And I mean... Yeah, they're like, I see the correlation that you're talking about with the way that Paxson and Boylen appear to be addressing what is the focus of this rebuild right now and how to go about getting the results that they want. However, it is not so striking to me that it is getting me to worry yet about Boylen actually being here next season. Now, maybe we are sitting here months from now as we are getting ready for spring or as we're getting spring training. Baseball's on my mind. As we're getting ready for training camp to say, oh my God, I can't believe that it's actually happening and Jim Boylen is still here. If and when that day comes, I will say, man, you know, I really thought that they were just providing some lip service to Boylen to keep any respect and credibility among his young team that he had, instead of undercutting him to the media, and that's all I thought it was, and it turns out I was wrong, and Paxson actually does believe in Jim Boylen this much, so much so to keep him on board for at least another year. If that happens months from now, I'll say I was wrong. But I really, really think that Bulls fans shouldn't panic yet about Boylen and Paxson and the fact that they, you know, Paxson loves Boylen, and Boylen is going to be the head coach of this team next season. I really don't think we're there yet. I really think that they have to honestly evaluate Boylen's job performance. This is a guy who burned his final timeout 6.5 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter on Monday. Like, Boylen makes some seriously head-scratching decisions. So many times he looks like a guy who's in way over his head. And the Bulls, for all that this fan base likes to crap on the front office, they cannot be that blind to stuff like that. Cannot be that blind to stuff like that.
I agree. And look, panic buttons on the desk, the glass case is flipped up, and I got my hand over it, but I'm not ready to hit it yet. It's just there. My hand is hovering it, but I haven't hit it yet. And I agree with you. I need to hear it, and I need to hear it straight from their mouths that say Jim Boylen is back 100%, and that doesn't happen until April. So I'm with you. I'm not gonna freak out yet, but I'm just saying, like, hearing all of that multiple times and needing to listen to that like half a dozen times a piece, that's where I'm becoming more and more afraid that the philosophies are lining up more than I thought ever before. So I just take that for what it is. And look, to Jim Boylan, the team looks a little bit better now. So he has changed a little bit. But at the same time, what you did in the first 2 or 3 weeks with this team, you're paying for it now. The hammer has been slammed down and you're paying for it. So you can't just wipe away and pretend like that is completely forgotten. So, and the players sure don't forget that.
And I mean, let's be honest. Do the Bulls front office and ownership, which would they rather have happen to them? They keep Jim Boylan around and Paxson keeps his guy who is a shock and awe, tough-minded coach who he thinks is the right guy for the job. And Zach LaVine comes to them and says, I can't. I'm demanding a trade. Trade me. I don't want this. I can't play for this guy. He's insane. Or would they prefer to keep Zach LaVine, who was actually starting to show real signs of chemistry with Lowry Markkanen, their other building block right now, and do so finding a new coach that perhaps more fits the style of how the NBA is trending? Because Boylan can be a Fred Hoiberg copycat for a stretch of games, which is what we've seen so far in this increased offensive efficiency that Boylan bragged about the other day. But you're not getting the real thing. It's like Cool Whip instead of whipped cream. It's frozen yogurt instead of ice cream. If what you like about Boylan right now is the increased offensive efficiency that he's getting under a Fred Hoiberg kind of offense, you can go find that somewhere else with a coach who doesn't make his players run until they bleed.
It's like shopping at Aldi. It's like you can find some name brand stuff there, but you also get Aldi brand, which is slapped right on there. And it's basically the same thing as what you would buy in name brand, but it's just got Aldi brand on it. So it's Fred Hoiberg's system, but it's Jim Boylan slapped on there. We'll find out, right, in April or May. We'll find out if this is real or not. And they had that decision to make with Butler, and they chose Hoiberg over Butler. And I'm not saying the situation's anywhere near the same, but they had a decision like this similar 2 years ago, and they made their choice then. So.
And in the meantime, right, Jimmy, come over across the pond, and we'll get some pints and try not to worry about tomorrow.
Absolutely. All right, one more voicemail here, and then we'll run through some more text messages. Remember, 331-979-1369. If you can't remember that number, pull out your phone right now. Save it as Locked On Bulls. 331-979-1369. Save that in your contacts. You can drop us text, voicemails, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. Another voicemail on deck. Let's get it.
Hi, guys. This is Patrick from Northwest Indiana. I'm going to try and articulate this the best I can, but I want to talk a little bit about Garn Paxson. I know there's a big part of our fan base that highly resents Garn Paxson and feels like they've been around too long and that they should have been cast aside a long time ago. Well, now, a question that I want to pose to you guys is this. When Paxson came in to his role in 2003 and made the move that he did that eventually led to D. Rose being drafted in 2008 in that summer. And then next thing you know, 2010, 2011, fast forward a couple years, he wins the MVP and the Bulls are on the cusp of fighting for a potential championship. Now, with that run from 2003 till that point, before Rose got hurt, would that not be considered a pretty successful rebuild? And if it wasn't for D. Rose being, injury-riddled, would have things been – well, would things be different regarding the outlook of Paxson and Gar at this point in time, and maybe I feel the reason why the Reisdorfs have given even more opportunity to Garn Paxson is because of maybe they believe there was a successful rebuild done by Paxson and Gar when they, drafted Ding and Noah and Gibson and Heinrich, and then they got lucky with Rose, and they were right there ready to compete for a championship, and oh man, bad luck. Now they, you know, had, then they had to tear it back down. So maybe the Reinsdorf still have a bit of confidence in Paxson and Gar because they feel, you know what, they built up the team once before and almost got to a championship. And if it wasn't for the injuries, they probably wholeheartedly believe that they would have got there. And so this is, you know, I feel, you know, their last chance. I mean, if they can't build it up this time, then I would put my money on them being gone at some point, whether if it's, you know, I won't put a year amount on it.
All right, thanks for the call from the 312. So before we answer this, we got to preface this. This call was dropped from January 31st, so this was a week before the trade deadline happened, so all before the press conference, the radio interviews, the trades. So, but I felt like it was fair enough to play on our show because we've got to play both sides, and we try to be as fair as possible on this show. Matt, what's your initial reaction from this? Because this is some of the stuff that Gar Forman and John Paxson have both used when talking about rebuilds, the multiple rebuilds that they've had since their tenure here. How do you feel about this?
I feel like this caller brings up some fair points. Thanks for checking in, Patrick. As far as why the Reinsdorf still have so much faith in John Paxson and Gar Forman, what they've always leaned on is their ability to draft well. And that is true when Patrick says things like Paxson took over in 2003 and the Bulls hit on Luol Deng and Kirk Heinrich in the same draft. They hit on Taj and Joakim as part of that kind of continuation of the baby Bulls rebuild after the initial baby Bulls, you know, featuring other, you know, role players like Nocioni and that, and those guys surprisingly made it to, you know, the playoffs and won a playoff series of just a few years after Paxson took control against the defending champion Miami Heat. Like, that's a thing that happened, and Paxson deserved credit for that. But that was more than 10 years ago. And Patrick also mentioned the fact that they, you know, they got Derrick Rose and built that back towards a team that was championship contention kind of team. And if it weren't for Derrick's injury, maybe the fan base looks a little more favorably at Paxson and Forman and is more willing to cut them a break here and there with other transgressions that the fan base is mad about these days. Okay, here's the thing with that. You can't give them credit for getting lucky and getting Derrick Rose. At the time, they were a team that was not even in purgatory of middling NBA teams that are stuck in the middle somewhere. They were a little more bad than stuck in the middle. And they had a less than 2% chance to get the number one pick to turn that into Derrick Rose, who became the league's youngest MVP ever. You can't give them credit for successfully getting a rebuild back towards championship contention because they got Derrick Rose. You can credit them for building around him, adding a young quality bench piece like Taj Gibson, adding quality bench pieces to create the bench mob, which was at the time one of the better bench units in the league with pieces like Kyle Korver and CJ Watson and all of those pieces. You can give them credit for that kind of stuff. But the fact that Derrick Rose being the youngest MVP ever and him coming from a 1.7% chance in the draft lottery being the biggest reason they were back towards championship contention, you can't give him credit for that. And guess what? Derrick Rose tearing his ACL happened, let's see, quick math, 7 years ago now? 7 years ago. Credit them for drafting Jimmy Butler at 30 and that kid turning into a star. Credit them for that. But how I think the fan base's biggest grievance right now is a combination of how much longer are they going to try and take credit for drafting guys that are really, you know, out of the picture because they're not willing to give them credit now for drafting Lowry or Wendell for whatever reason, even though I think they did hit on both of those draft picks personally. And how much longer are they going to use Derrick Rose's injury as an excuse? Because we hear that from them a lot, and I think it drives the fan base crazy, because as I said, that was 7 years ago.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, too. The fact that, you know, had they not hit on that, whatever it was, 1.6% chance in 2008 for Derrick Rose, like, where would you have been? Joakim Noah and Ben Gordon would have been your two best players on that roster, right?
And that team's not winning 62 games and going to the conference finals.
So I get it. Part of the NBA is luck. That's part of building teams. That's part of it. But it's not all of that, and you can't bank on building a championship team off of luck. If you do that, you end up where you are right now, a decade without getting back to the NBA Finals. 2 decades without getting back to the NBA Finals. Like, think about it from this perspective. The Bulls were not even two years removed from swapping LaMarcus Aldridge for Tyrus Thomas. And then they got Derrick Rose. They did draft Joakim Noah in between those 2 years. And they drafted Taj Gibson right after that, a year after the Derrick Rose draft. So I'll give them that. And then 2 years after that, then they drafted Taj Gibson. And then they drafted Jimmy Butler. But then it kind of all fell downhill after that, you know? And so it was stacking up. It was the Tony Snell draft. It was the Marquise Teague draft. It was trading up for Doug McDermott, trading away Nurkic and Harris. And then you got Bobby, but then it was trading and drafting Denzel. So it was all of these little things that added up. And I agree with you, Matt, too. It's like Paxson wants to just focus on the future when it's convenient for him. But then when people ask him about not getting any free agents in the last decade, 2 decades, then he just talks about being a player and being in the conversation back in 2010. I don't get it. It's when it's convenient for them, they talk about the past. But when it's not, and when you're pressed about what's happening now, it's like, no, we can't look back at the past. We got to look at the future. So it's just kind of a contradiction for me. As far as like what the Reinsdorfs are doing and why they have so much faith in this is how they have always operated, though. It's always operated back to loyalty. You can look at it the way the White Sox have operated. Since they won the World Series, Kenny Williams had been running the show. He had been running the show, and the Sox made one playoff appearance in 2008 from winning the World Series. And then it took so long for them to finally move him out of that position and bring Rick Hahn in. Finally. And we're still not even at a point as a White Sox fan. So it's happened with two different franchises. It's just the way Jerry Reinsdorf has always been. He's loyal to a fault and loyal to all the people around him. And that's a good thing, and it's also a really bad thing. So,
well, and I
would
add,
this is it.
I would add this about the Reinsdorfs. Jerry is checked out. Michael is running this team. Or I should say, Michael is running this company. Michael is a perfectly competent executive when it comes to turning the Bulls from a $2.6 billion company last season into a $2.9 billion company this season. Really good at that. But Michael Reinsdorf is not a basketball mind. Michael Reinsdorf does not know the ins and outs and intricacies of this sport and the way that this league is trending. Michael Reinsdorf does not have a circle, an inner circle of basketball minds that he trusts, which is why he just lets John Paxson run this team, and John Paxson brings back in Doug Collins to be like a special advisor who we never hear from, because this team is stuck in the past. Michael Reinsdorf doesn't have circles. Michael Reinsdorf doesn't know basketball people, which is why, to me, and it's something that you and I joke about a lot on this show since he mentioned it at the beginning of this season, and it's a drop that you put in there all the time, when he references Jerry West being so enamored with the Bulls rebuild and the direction they're going, and Michael Reinsdorf saying, well, Jerry West believes in our rebuild and our direction, and I trust him because he's Jerry West. That is the extent of basketball relationships and advice and wisdom that Michael Reinsdorf has at his disposal, is the occasional phone call with Jerry West, who, by the way, is busy running his own organization. So that is the problem. The Reinsdorfs and the loyal to a fault, part of it is Paxson was and still is, because of loyalty, a big part of this organization since his playing days. That's part of it. But part of the loyalty is the fact that Michael Reinsdorf just doesn't have any connections, because he's not a basketball guy. He's a CEO of a company. And that is a big part of the problem.
And Jerry West, by the way, is playing he's playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers, too, with the Clippers, and doing it again with what he did with the Warriors. So, I don't know. It just goes back to everything we've said, and I think now what we heard from the press conference, and like I said before, preface this with this voicemail came a week before all this trade deadline and press conference and radio interviews. And what I will say is, I think from what I heard from the press conference and the radio interviews is, Paxson is more dug in and has dug his heels in now more so than ever before. Foresee them leaving anytime soon. I really don't. I think this is him digging his heels in and saying, we're going to try to make this right, and now we're going to try to really prove everybody
wrong. Paxson is too competitive and too stubborn of a person to walk away. He did say in a recent interview, if it gets to a point where I don't feel confident in getting this team back on the right track, that I will come to Michael and Jerry and say, I'm walking away. But I don't buy that for a second, because I think he does believe in the moves that they're making, and he does think that he is still the right man for this job. And as much as Bulls fans scrape and claw and clamor for it, the only way that Paxson leaves is if he resigns. They will never fire him. Forever. That is the sad reality that so many Bulls fans refuse to face. And until Michael Reinsdorf stops seeing hundreds of millions of dollars of increases in what essentially is now his team is worth, Forbes top 10 list NBA franchises, Bulls clock in at number 4 despite being 13-42 when those rankings come out. Cool. Great. Keep doing what you're doing, Pax. I'll keep doing what I'm doing.
Thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it, because playing both sides, and I don't think this Bulls fan's trying to defend the front office or the ownership. He's just saying, like, look at it from this perspective, and I appreciate that. And appreciate the call, too.
Here is a hypothetical trade from the 703. How about this, guys? If the Bulls get Zion, fingers crossed, trade Dunn, Felicio, and a 2021 top 10 protected first to Memphis for Mike Conley. What? Why would Memphis take that deal?
Memphis would hang up the phone, too.
Why do Bulls fans have these grandiose ideas about trades and what other teams would accept as being equal value? For a while, Conley was the biggest contract in the NBA, and yeah, that was an overpay by Memphis, and they might be eager to move on from that. But Dunn, a garbage man named Felicio, and a protected 2021 first? Like, what? In what world do the Grizzlies see that as equal or close to equal value for Mike Conley? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, we just heard that people were offering up pretty good deals to Memphis for Mike Conley at the deadline, and that's like 2 years removed from what Mike Conley still owed on his contract. And they said no, and they're like, nah, you know what, we'll just keep him.
Stop it. Get some help.
Here's another one, 587, and I've seen this a lot more, Matt. Future lineup for 2020. This all depends on if we don't get Ja Morant in the draft. Moving Zach LaVine to the point guard and a vet point guard to help show and teach Zach LaVine who can play, also play meaningful minutes and teach Zach LaVine how to play point guard, a shooting guard, which we'll need, Cam Reddish or RJ Barrett, small forward Otto Porter, Lauri Markkanen at power forward, and Wendell Carter Jr. at center. So I guess playing off the idea of moving Zach LaVine to your point guard position. Matt, I don't like this idea. I don't like this idea of moving Zach LaVine to the point guard position whatsoever. Did we forget about the first 25 games of the season where Zach LaVine was turning the ball over at an extreme rate when he was the main ball handler in a high usage percentage? Did we forget that?
Apparently this fan did, because I'm with you. I think that's a terrible idea. Zach LaVine is an awesome scoring threat at the two guard position in this league. We have seen, even just from the simple arrival of Otto Porter Jr. and the creation of more space for LaVine to operate, and the way that he can go one-on-one ISO and attack the basket and also knock down some outside shots when those opportunities present themselves. Zach LaVine is such a valuable offensive weapon in this league, but not as a point guard. I'm sorry, we saw that. Just like you said, Jordan, the dude, when he is trying to be the team's primary ball handler and facilitator, he's a turnover machine. Yeah, he's had a couple of a little mini stretch run here recently where he's been racking up some assists, but that's just because of the way that the spacing has opened up on this floor. That is why. I still don't think he has good enough court vision, and he's not a strong enough passer to be a competitive team's primary point guard. I don't see
Yeah, I just
it.
Don't like the idea of that at all. I don't like the idea of putting Zach LaVine at the point guard position. Not only the fact that his turnover rate was ridiculous when he had to be the main ball handler, when you didn't have a point guard, a.k.a. Chris Dunn, out there. You had Cameron Payne and Archie Diacono and Shaq Harrison and everybody else that was in
right.
the mix. So.
And I think that's why some Bulls fans, including this one, are so desperate right now to figure out the point guard thing, because we have been disappointed with the hilarious carousel of backups over the last couple of seasons who have all been atrocious. And this season, being disappointed in Chris Dunn when some of us had hopes for him having a bounce back year and actually proving that he belongs as a part of this rebuild and a starting point guard in this league, which a lot of us, I think, are falling off of that wagon right now. We don't believe that Chris Dunn is the guy. So everyone's scrambling, trying to come up with solutions to the point guard position. But those of you out there who think that Zach LaVine is the answer, I know that you're trying to solve an issue right now, but you take LaVine out of the way that he can be the most efficient offensive weapon on this team and just create yourself a second problem and don't solve the initial problem.
Yeah, all the problems don't need to be fixed right now. That it doesn't all need to be fixed right now. So that's all I would say. And just think about it on a two-way perspective. Even if you flip-flop LaVine and whoever you got starting at the two on defense, if you kept LaVine at the point guard position and made a matchup against point guards, he would get absolutely torched on the defensive side of the ball. So even if you flip-flopped him and just let him run the point
right.
on offense, I think it would be a mess.
And just because, and I think another factor, and I think we got a separate texter asking us about this, noting the recent increase of chemistry that exists between LaVine and Markkanen, and LaVine and Markkanen running some pick and roll situations, some pick and pop situations that have actually started to look pretty good. Just like, you can still have moments where you run a two-man game with LaVine and Markkanen without LaVine being your primary point guard. You can still use different looks and different sets on the offensive end that include continuing to build the chemistry of your two best offensive players right now, again, without making LaVine your primary point guard. Those things can all exist in the same offense.
LaVine's improving his passing and his vision, but it's taking time, and he's taking baby steps towards that. It's not all going to happen overnight. Now I sound like Gar Foreman when I say that.
It doesn't. You don't snap your fingers, and it all happens at once. But
still, it's not going to happen overnight, and he's slowly improving on that. Don't just change things, because that could make things regress. We don't have to figure everything out overnight, so let's just...
Yeah, I'm with you, but boy... Just sifting through, we have so many fans saying we should try Zach at point guard. I am not on board with that experiment. I think we've already seen what it looks like, and it doesn't look
and
good.
I get it. Devin Booker is doing it in Phoenix, and it's working well, but Devin Booker has proved that he can be a really good passer, and I don't think Zach LaVine's at that level yet, and he may never be at that level of Devin Booker can be. So let's just relax and see if we can get a guy in here and just appreciate that Zach LaVine is actually improving in his passing and his facilitating. And while Dunn is struggling mightily right now, options can open up this summer and see what happens next year. But just don't try to fix everything right now.
All right, let's go to this one. This is an interesting one that I've been thinking about a lot myself recently, Jordan. This one comes from the 269. If the Bulls are to get lucky and land the number one pick this year, Zion obviously is the first choice. If that happens, how do you see him fitting into this lineup? Does he play at the three alongside Lowry and Wendell, or at the four and they look to move one of those other guys to another team? Do they bring one of those two guys off the bench? And now, of course, even bringing in Otto Porter makes it even more complicated, because now it's not so simple as plugging Zion at the three. Jordan, what are your thoughts on this one?
Let me just say that I'm glad I'm not the Bulls coach. And this is a good problem to have, right? If you land Zion and now you've got Otto Porter, you've got Carter, you got Wendell, and you got Zach. I mean, you could, hypothetically, you could bring Zion off the bench as your sixth man, and you could still play him 25 to 27 minutes a night, right? Or start him off at 22 to 25 minutes a night. and see the slow progression of that. And if he is improving mightily, and like you said, he could play the three or the four, so you could stick him in as your backup power forward and also play him at the wing minutes. So the idea that he needs to be inserted right away in the starting lineup, I don't think is necessarily true. But at the same time, we've seen the elite skills that he has in the NCAA, so it'd be kind of crazy not to play him right away on a rebuilding team. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, to me, it's not a concern for today, because obviously we don't know if we're getting Zion. But even in the hypothetical, let's play that the Bulls have the number one pick.
Are you going to play devil's advocate?
We can figure that out. And obviously, this texture is right. You don't worry about fit. You take Zion Williamson.
Absolutely.
Because he is the only potentially franchise-changing talent in this draft class, which is pretty weak. And you worry about fit later. In that scenario, outside of, say, the same reason and logic they had for defending the Jabari signing, which I didn't agree with, in this scenario, don't worry about fit. Holy geez, just take Zion. Don't screw up something this easy. This is an easy decision. People, before they really started watching Zion play at Duke this season, as this season has progressed, were concerned about how his body and his physical attributes would translate at the NBA level, specifically on the defensive end. And if anything, he has shown us time and again, including that insane block from a few games ago, that he is going to be a versatile gifted benefit on the defensive end. I think that the Bulls could play Zion at anywhere 3, 4, or 5 with the other talent they have on this team. We were talking in yesterday's episode about how, you know, we've seen some looks from Boylan recently where you're playing Markkanen at the 5 small ball. You're playing even Otto Porter at the 5 small ball. And the Otto at the 5 small ball didn't go well. But that's because the Bulls second unit right now is doo-doo. So you have all of these opportunities and all these windows of what to do. And there's even some people saying, hey, you know what? Wendell, he could be a guy that you can play at the 5 and maybe the 4 in some lineups, given what your other team is putting out there. So there is versatility with Zion. I think the Bulls are going to have continued versatility with their front court when it comes to Otto and Lowry and maybe even Wendell, that you can play around with different lineups and see what works.
It's a good problem to have. That is a fantastic problem to have. Matt, last question here. Thought it was a good one. Want to sneak it in. This is from the 420, another international texter, somebody who's been listening to our show for a long time, Renee, all the way from Prague. He's a Chicago guy, all the way from Prague. He said, can we finally end the narrative that Dunn is an elite defender? He clearly isn't. Also, kind of want to get your guys' opinion on what Portis and Parker's contract will be this summer. What do you guys think teams will offer them?
Okay. Well, for starters, the whole Dunn being an elite defender narrative, here, let's just throw these numbers at you. His defensive rating his rookie year at Minnesota was a 109. Last season with the Bulls, it was a 107. This season with the Bulls, it's a 111. The Bulls as a team have regressed defensively, so that is a factor in his defensive rating being the worst of his career this season. As far as his defensive box plus minus, it was 1.5 as a rookie, 1.4 last year with the Bulls, and this season just a 0.5. So still positive, but almost a full point less than it was last season. And again, so this texter is necessarily incorrect saying that they're sick of the Chris Dunn is an elite defender narrative, because this season his metrics back up, Dunn's metrics back up the point that he is not an elite defender. But a lot of that is the fact that the Bulls as a team have been atrocious defensively this season.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I mean, the defense has been down, but I wouldn't necessarily say like anybody was categorizing him as elite. Like, how many elite defenders are actually in the NBA, right? Like, not that many. 10 maybe, right? 10, 15. As far as Portis and Parker this summer, I think Portis is asking $16 million per. I don't think he's getting anywhere near that. We'll find out. If we find out how dumb the Wizards are this summer to see what they match. I think Bobby probably can get probably $10 million if he continues to play as well as he is. I think $10 million per maybe, I think 8 to 12 million, 12 on the really high side if a team is really desperate to have some scoring options. But Bobby's got to continue to play outstanding over the next 27 games to really prove himself. Add those last season, this season together, combine those two, I think 12 million isn't out of the realm of possibility, but more realistic, 8 to 10 million a year over 2 or 3 years, I think is more realistic than anything. What do you think about Parker, though?
I mean, clearly he did not end up being worth the $20 million the Bulls signed him to this year. And it's funny that they just want to take credit for the way that they structured that contract at $20 million with a team option, which essentially made an expiring deal, is what allowed them to get Otto in that trade. True, but not something they should brag about. As far as what Jabari's value is coming into next season or this summer and free agency, again, we'll see how much time he gets with these Wizards. We did see when the Bulls played them just last Saturday that Parker started the game coming off the bench and then at halftime got inserted into the starting five to start the second half. So, you know, maybe they're already starting to see the value in Jabari and want to see him stick around. Although, you know, without John Wall pretty much all of next season now with the Achilles, I don't see them as really realistically trying to compete next season. So maybe they're not trying to spend money on a mediocre player like Jabari, on a one-way player like Jabari. Some other team out there might see what he did for the Bulls off the bench and what he's doing for the Wizards right now as a guy who can come in and just give you points. A poor man's Carmelo who can come in off the bench and create offense just with his skill set and pay him, I don't know, somewhere between 10 and 15 million a season. But I think there is next to no chance that Jabari nets a multi-year deal this summer that has, you know, that has him earning 20 million annually. I do not see that happening.
Agreed. Totally agree. I think probably a one-year deal. Like, think about last year. Julius Randle got a one-year deal at $9 million. And Jabari still got two ACLs hanging up on him too, so.
Right. I was going to say, the ACLs are still a factor here. It would be a very big risk of any team to sign him to a big long-term money deal with those two ACL tears.
Maybe Jabari commits to a multi-year deal at a significantly less price just because he got the $20 million this year. So he's made a little bit of money, plus the being a first round of being a, you know, a top lottery pick and all of that, he's made some money there. So maybe he wants security over the bag and wants to go to a place that he can stay for a few years. So, but thanks for all your texts, your questions. The 219 says, I'll tell you what it means to be a bull, to be a part of the Bulls core, Jordan. He said, you need to be a part of the leadership committee.
Hey-o.
Number one text to 2019.
Oh, well done. Well done. That's, I mean, as long as Boylan's in charge, that's true. Who's the core? I don't know. Ask the leadership committee.
Oh, boy. Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We're headed into All-Star break, All-Star weekend, so no Bulls basketball for a little while. But that doesn't mean that there is no shows. We will have shows for you on Friday. We will have shows all week next week, planning a bunch of different stuff. So continue to stay locked in here at Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.